Adapt Agility, Overcoming Biological Resistance to Change by Derek J. Maines. Preface by Aaron Baer. In an era of accelerating change and exponential technological advancements, the ability to adapt and embrace the needed agility for the future will be the single most important characteristic of successful people. Derek Maines has nailed the path forward for successful people with his thesis in Adapt Agility, Overcoming Instinctual Resistance for Change. The book is the result of Maines' passion as a process fixer, driven by data. Adapt Agility is the culmination of years of research, observations, and personal experience in the ever-evolving landscape of innovation and human potential. Clients often anchor against the prevailing winds of change, sitting in resistance to the telltale signs of systematic changes. And Derek Maines stewards his clients with data, compassion, and mental models to take advantage of the opportunities that present themselves with the coming new winds. As the world becomes increasingly interconnected and complex, we find ourselves facing an unprecedented rate of change. The constant state of flux makes adaptability and agility vital survival skills. Unfortunately, our innate resistance to change often proves to be the significant obstacle in both our professional and personal lives. Resistance to change inevitability permeates into greater organizational focuses. The journey towards adapt agility is not an easy one. It's a necessary path worth taking to capitalize on these very prevailing winds of change. Adapt agility provides a roadmap to help individuals, organizations, and societies break free from the shackles of instinctive resistance and develop the capacity for adapt agility. It's my hope that this book will inspire readers to embrace the challenges of change, harness the power of adapt agility, and create a brighter and more prosperous future. I encourage you to approach the material with an open mind and willingness to challenge your preconceived notions about change, adaptability, and agility. By embracing adapt agility and engaging with Derek Maines, you'll have a guide on the side that is challenging conventional thoughts and accelerating at an exponential pace. I'm excited to have Derek in my circle. He's thinking big and challenging conventional wisdom in the face of a world changing exponentially. Happy reading. Aaron Baer, author of Exponential Theory, The Power of Thinking Big. Part 1, It's Biology. Not enough men could be mustered to drag the engine to the scene of the conflagration. In the 1800s, the fire department of New York City proudly pulled their firefighting rigs, ladders, and buckets on fire wagons powered by sheer manpower. When a fire alarm sounded, volunteers would rush to the aid of the firemen to help them drag their gear through the streets to their fiery destinations. In 1832, as cholera was sweeping America, the number of volunteers was depleted, and fire departments found themselves unable to get equipment to the sites of fires. The epidemic was taking its toll, and reluctantly, even the traditionalists knew that things had to change. Later that same year, the fire department of NYC reluctantly purchased a fleet of horses to keep the stations running. Other fire departments took longer to adapt, and some of the last holdouts adopting horsepower only did so after firefighters walked out in protest over horse-drawn fire engines, thus sealing their own fates. A few decades later, the last farriers in New York City closed for good, and many were shocked at how quickly times had changed, just like their fathers and fathers before them were. From 1890 to 1920, in just 30 years, 99.9935% of horse carriage companies in the United States went out of business. Domestication of animals took many thousands of years, yet the shift from animal power to gas-powered machines happened in decades. And in the 65 years since the first microchip was introduced, the replacement of new technologies has occurred at a faster and faster pace. Today, change seems to come in real time. Change is all around us, and like an avalanche racing down the slope, it's accelerating and gaining mass. Knowing how to adapt to change, finding areas that need change, and creating the capacity for change are key skills leaders need in this new era. But woefully few of us have ever learned these skills. Instead, we've been focused on growth at all costs, command and control approaches to management, where we should know all, see all, and command all from our corner offices. We throw bodies, spreadsheets, and more software at problems, hoping that the wheels will not fall off. Our growth rarely obtains economies of scale, and instead we're overworked, understaffed, and paying too much to get too little accomplished, even in the era of increased productivity. Our ability to adapt to technological advances such as 3D printing, virtual reality, Web3, decentralization, blockchain, tokenization, machine learning, and AI will be the determining factors of business success in this coming decade. Change has become the only constant, always proceeding in a subjectively advancing direction. The annual plan of the future will be adjusted in real time in order to deal with the onslaught of new information, technologies, and competitors that will arrive unannounced from a concept in a garage just days or hours before. Proclaiming the end of your industry and the arriving of new technologies or ideas we cannot yet comprehend. Companies that will survive the coming environment must be agile and able to pivot quickly. They must be able to thrive in an environment where each day's new challenges are the equivalent to decades of change in the past. As the great Wayne Gretzky once said, "I skate to where the puck is going, not where it's been." The puck's moving faster, it's accelerating and doubling in size each month. We must adapt, we must become agile. Unfortunately, our biology and our deeply embedded genetic code will be one of the greatest barriers to our success. In Daniel Kahneman's seminal work, Thinking Fast and Slow, he delves into the dual cognitive systems that govern human thought and behavior. The two modes of thinking can be described as deliberate and reflective, facilitating strategic planning, slow, and instinctive and automatic, demanding immediate response, fast. While swift thinking has its merits, it's our capacity to master long-term, slow thinking that distinguishes humans from other species and propels human advancement. As human innovation evolves at a pace faster than our own biological evolution, the evolutionary responses our ancestors inherited from our earliest emergence lie buried just beneath the surface. Yet today's changes are quite different from those faced by our ancestors. Today we're stressed about markets, boardrooms, and the cancellation of our favorite Real Housewives franchise. Not with what will feed our families over the winter. Nevertheless, our evolutionary heritage continues to shape our response to change, and it offers valuable insights into managing these transformations effectively. The human ability to navigate long-term changes was cause for our dominance of the environment on this planet. Our skill is evident in our adaptation to seasonal fluctuations and animal migration patterns, which led early humans to adapt nomadic lifestyles. Consequently, the development of shelter, clothing, food storage, commerce, and agriculture all resulted from our ability to anticipate and adapt to gradual change. Unlike humans, other species tend to focus on the present moment and react to changes instinctively, relying upon their limbic system or lizard brain, inherited traits from their ancestors, or environmental clues. Although humans have evolved a sophisticated system for processing complex change, we still depend on our primal instincts in situations where hesitation could prove disastrous. When faced with imminent threats, such as a falling boulder or a sudden danger, our advanced cognitive abilities take a back seat and our primal instinct takes over. When encountering an unknown figure on the horizon, there's time to assess the situation and gather additional information before determining an appropriate course of action. Factors such as the stranger's weaponry, physical size, facial expressions, and historical precedents play crucial roles in shaping our response. Conversely, imagine being startled awake by a warm droplet of saliva from a bear looming above you, eager for its next meal. In such a scenario, there's no room for contemplation. An immediate reaction is imperative to survival. Due to the constraints of time, instinctive responses are inherently limited. Nature has determined that a select few responses have offered the greatest chance of survival, and therefore our ancestors have inherited these genes, and they're with us here today as us. Over numerous occurrences, these responses proved their worth and earned their distinction in our genetic makeup. By understanding and balancing these cognitive systems, leaders can harness the power of both fast and slow thinking, enhancing our ability to lead change in our organizations and in the marketplace. Change at work. In the book Switch, How to Change Things When Change is Hard by Chip Heath and Dan Heath, the authors use the analogy of an elephant and its rider attempting to navigate a certain path to explore the nature of behavioral change. In this analogy, the elephant symbolizes the power and instinctive emotional side of human nature, that deep biological programming that often seeks immediate needs and avoidance rather than long-term benefits. On the other hand, the rider represents the rational, logical side of human nature, which recognizes what needs to be done and can exert some measure of control over the elephant by tugging on its reins. Ultimately, the path represents the context or environment in which this behavioral change must occur. By understanding and working with both the elephant and the rider, one can chart a course towards meaningful and sustainable transformation. The elephant will always take the fast approach to gain gratification or avoid displeasure, if permitted. The rider, on the contrary, must use their influence and perspective perched high on the elephant's back and their control over the elephant in order to keep it on the desired path of change towards the objective. Once we understand the deep biological nature of our reactions to change, we can easily see how counteractive it is for leaders to use the element of surprise when announcing change in their organizations. Mistakenly constructing a message that resonates with their audience like the aforementioned bear and its drooling drop of saliva, or a hard pull on the reins, straining the neck of the elephant whose back we ride upon. Our evolutionary response at work is no different from our responses in the natural environment. It is biologically encoded in us. The appearance of acute stress triggers our response to stimuli, and a hormonal response occurs in the amygdala, releasing adrenaline into the system to expedite the expression of a resolute response. If we're alone in our biological reaction to the stimuli, our next action will be dependent upon our mind's determination and the embedded decision tree deep inside our lizard brains. If our response to stimuli is immediately required, the limbic system uses genetic predisposition to prioritize its response, and it will therefore proceed with slowing down other processes so that we can focus on the threat at hand. In a group setting, our brains might consider the collective response of others in determining appropriate action. By distributing the decision-making process across multiple individuals, we gain access to a broader range of data points. Two heads are better than one. In essence, our limbic systems operate democratically in group scenarios, taking into account external reactions alongside its own processing. This phenomenon is known as limbic resonance. Limbic resonance is the emotional attunement and synchronization that can occur between individuals, especially in a close relationship or in a small group. It's based on the idea that our emotions, which are regulated by the limbic system in the brain, can influence and be influenced by the emotions of others around us. These influences can result in groups acting collectively. In addition to the limbic response to change, we must also prepare to battle against the type of neuron embedded in the human brain that can cause widespread challenges to change. Mirror neurons are specialized brain cells that activate when an individual performs an action or observes someone else performing an action. First discovered in the late 1990s in macaw monkeys, the identification of mirror neurons significantly expanded our comprehension of how humans and other animals interact and socialize. These neurons play a vital role in various fundamental cognitive processes, such as imitation, empathy, and understanding others' actions and intentions. For instance, when observing someone enjoying a tasty meal, our mirror neurons activate and transmit signals to our brain, simulating the experience of eating the meal ourselves. This phenomenon enhances our ability to appreciate and savor that meal vicariously. By fostering emotional connections and support while managing potentially negative emotional contagion and stress, businesses can use the understanding of limbic resonance and mirror neurons to promote adaptability and resilience during times of change. Our approach must be focused in three areas in order to synchronize these limbic resonances and overcome emotional contagion. First, emotional support. Limbic resonance can create a sense of emotional synchrony and support among other team members. When employees feel emotionally connected, they can be more open to change as they know they have the support of their colleagues during the transition. Collective problem solving. A shared emotional connection can promote collaboration and open communication. When faced with change, employees can work together to find creative solutions and adaptation to new circumstance more effectively. Increased motivation and commitment. When employees feel emotionally connected and supported, they're more likely to be motivated and committed to the success of the business. This will lead to greater willingness to embrace change and work towards shared goals. Simultaneously, we must lead change away from diverging into the negative impact that limbic synchronization and the elephant can create. These negative impacts include resistance to change. Emotional contagion can lead to a situation where negative emotions, such as fear or mistrust or trepidation, spread through the group. This can make it more challenging for the business to implement the necessary changes effectively. Amplification of stress. Limbic resonance can amplify the stress and anxiety experienced by employees during periods of change. High levels of stress can hinder productivity and decision-making, making it more difficult to adapt. Resistance to innovative ideas. Employees who are strongly influenced by their mirror neurons may be more likely to conform to the behaviors and attitudes of their peers. This conformity can make it challenging for individuals to break away from established norms, limiting the potential for innovative ideas or approaches that could facilitate change. Groupthink. Strong emotional connection within a group can sometimes lead to conformity in groupthink. This may result in a reluctance to express dissenting opinions or explore alternative perspectives, which can be detrimental when facing change. Reinforcement of existing behaviors. As mirror neurons help us learn and imitate the actions of others, employees may be more inclined to maintain the status quo by mimicking the behaviors they observe around them. This tendency can create resistance to change and make it more difficult for new processes, ideas, or behaviors to take hold. When considering change, it's important to be prepared and have a strong coalition of leaders and peers from across the organization, as well as external resources that operate outside the political structure of the organization that are visible to those being faced with the change. If you do not have the coalition secured, the reaction of the group will likely be negative, as the only opportunity to mirror behavior will be that of those reeling from the impact of the change. Thereby, the response of those most affected will become the mimicked response of the group. Fight, flight, freeze, or fawn. When facing an imminent threat, our brains present a limited number of response options: fight, flight, freeze, and the lesser known fawn. When confronting a hungry bear or a manager proposing a novel approach to work, the perceived threat heightens our awareness and focus, prompting the limbic system to quickly evaluate the odds and select the response with the highest likelihood of success. External cues such as a barking dog, a facial expression of disdain, or a colleague's sigh can significantly influence our reaction and may elicit uncontrollable responses. As consultants specializing in organizational change, we've witnessed the consequences of poorly planned, quickly discussed, and hastily agreed upon changes. Inevitably, those who feel negatively impacted by change will exhibit responses that align with the evolutionary mechanisms that have safeguarded our ancestors. When faced with change in the workplace, employees naturally exhibit one of the four instincts. Often employees perceive change as a threat and react accordingly, mirroring the instinctive response of their colleagues, even if those responses are ill-suited for the situation. Our brains have not evolved to distinguish between these threats. The threat of a bear and the threat of change both elicit the same biological response. Freeze. The freeze response often appears momentarily in all reactions while the brain processes information. Prolonged freezing typically occurs when a sudden threat arises, and either fight or flight could lead to disastrous consequences. The freeze response serves two purposes. First, it buys time for the brain to concentrate on the situation and make a more informed decision, often creating the sensation of time slowing down. Second, it acts as a defense mechanism, allowing the individual to remain still and let the situation develop or the environment to provide additional information. In the case of stepping upon a snake on our path, our first response, a rush of adrenaline and a freeze, could be quickly followed with the determination that the threat's really not a threat after all, Maybe the snake is not poisonous. It's quickly retreating from our path. Or it's not a snake at all, but a stick. Fawn. The fawn response is not always applicable, but it's easily recognizable. Fawning implies subordination of one's own desire in an effort to appease. Essentially, individuals attempt to satisfy the perceived threat in order to protect themselves. Handing over your wallet to the mugger, complying with the demands of a kidnapper, surrendering your hard-earned kill to the wolf approaching ominously. All are biological responses trying to posture to the threat that you are not a threat. In the context of organizational change, freeze and fawn responses are often observed in employees who are waiting to see how change will affect them and how others will react to that change. These individuals may be influenced by past experiences with change, which are often negative. They typically look to their direct supervisors and influential colleagues for cues on how to respond. If they observe positive and enthusiastic responses from those who are involved in the planning process, they're more likely to mimic and mirror those responses. As a result, the limbic system's control diminishes, allowing employees to consider the benefits and challenges of the change and contemplate how it could be advantageous for them. Fight and flight. Flight is a common reaction to change initiatives in the workplace. Some employees may feel comfortable with their current roles and they're not eager to have to relearn tasks. Others have created a facade of competence and see any analysis, eyeballs, or threat of change as a direct threat to their livelihood. The affected parties might request transfers, withdraw from responsibilities and protest, or even leave the company altogether. In our early practice, we observed up to 10% of the workforce in small companies either voluntarily leaving or being terminated due to resistance when faced with change. Some left because of inadequate change management, resulting in frustration and confusion. Nowadays, we only work with companies that allow us first to quantify the value of change for those affected. As a result, most people are open to change when they understand its effects on them and the benefits it offers to their career and the business. A common initial resistance to change stems from the belief that the sole purpose is to cut costs and eliminate jobs. Therefore, in our work, we collaborate with leadership to identify and demonstrate the need for improved capacity and the opportunities that come with process automation or enhancements. Clear communication about the potential benefits, opportunities, and improved outcomes for employees is crucial. However, some employees may still resist or leave the company. Some will fight change just for the sake of fighting, and it's better to remove them as their disruptions could trigger the limbic or mirror response in others. In such cases, it's essential to provide them with graceful retreat. When Napoleon was forced to return to France after his failed invasion of Russia, the Russians knew that fighting a force with no potential route of retreat would result in a high number of casualties. Not wanting to force the French to fight to the death, the Russians permitted French forces a pathway of retreat, giving the French hope of survival, and subsequently, the Russian winter the time to do what it may. If it is expected your change will result in an inevitable flight of some of your people, find a way to allow them to retreat gracefully. Some companies have successfully created pay-to-quit programs where employees are given a choice at certain intervals of staying or being paid to leave the company, giving those who are causing friction or no longer aligned with the vision a soft landing to exit. Change management in business is therefore understanding how to present the change in a way where leadership provides the vision that aligns the whole organization to it, and then, most importantly, those leaders walk the talk, being aware of the limbic and mirror responses and cautious not to incite the irrationality of the crowd. Instead, giving those affected ample time and consideration of the situation, allowing them the opportunity to be part of the change while following your leadership. When change is not presented in this fashion, it is doomed, and rational discourse will likely not work to reestablish order. Instead, leaders should carefully consider their change initiatives through the perspectives of their people and in correlation to the biologically evolutionary response intrinsic in all of us. When addressing a change initiative in your organization, the preparation and groundwork leading up to the launch are more important than the actual presentation of change. Adequate preparation, rehearsal, and navigation of challenges surrounding change must be done well before introducing it to the group. Statistically, as leaders, we are terrible at change. Only 34% of change initiatives succeed. So any amount of consideration of these points will improve your odds of success. Part two, the process. Over 25 years of leading operational change in companies, we have seen many different methods, tried dozens of approaches, and failed in more ways than we can count. Today, we follow a process that we've developed over time that focuses on quick wins through less disruptive change and allows the desire for change to grow organically from those being affected, prioritizing changes that are simple, useful, and impactful, building and sustaining a desire for more change. Uncover and discover. Before deciding on the necessary changes, it's crucial to look beyond the symptoms and identify the root cause of problems. Many companies may jump to large-scale change solutions when a simple tweak to an existing process would suffice. Many consultants are looking for long-term engagement, and enterprise deployment of software can keep them billing for years. Their incentive is monthly billing, not successfully leading the charge of change. The solutions they offer might be the right ones, but they may not be right for that place and time, and the responses of those affected are rarely taken under consideration. On the contrary, having owned our own businesses, some successful, some have failed, and we've lost our hard-earned money and the money of our investors. So our approach is different. Instead of focusing on the be-all and end-all, we build efficiency from the ground up, creating a groundswell of change, systematically creating limbic resilience so that the company can build a collective belief that change is good, right, and beneficial. Think of change like a minimal viable product. Build change in its most basic, simplest form to validate the change, run an experiment, obtain insights, and get buy-in from the early adopters and dissenters. Then repeat. Our discovery process requires a thorough understanding of the work leading to the area needing change. This discovery involves creating detailed process maps and time studies to understand the task and their associated costs and challenges, engaging those who will be affected by the change, thereby giving them a voice in determining the necessary adjustments in their implementation. The discovery process can be tedious, as it requires a complete and full picture of the work being done that leads to that area where you feel change is needed. That means a full detailed process map of every step, click, wrench, turn, and a detailed time study that shows the minutes and seconds each aspect of the process takes. Spending considerable time identifying the cost of what is currently being done and the challenges it brings to the organization and its people. It's not time and money lost. It becomes the firm foundation for all future change. Measure every second it takes to perform tasks. Highlight the hardships in the process. Identify the waterfall effects that the current process creates for other processes and departments. Obtain buy-in from those in the process who will be affected and provide them with both a voice and a seat at the table in determining the needed change, the stages of it, and how it should be rolled out. Even if a complete system overhaul is necessary, identify areas for immediate improvement and create quick wins and alleviate the sense of urgency surrounding the situation. This process is critical. Without it, the direction of the change is solely dependent on what the executives believe is needed. Sometimes they have a good idea of what the problem is that they're solving for. But more often when we get in the weeds, we find the problem is very different than what leadership believed. And more often than not, the problems we discover are simpler to fix than imagined. I write a book just on stories of simple fixes when resolved, created massive, sweeping, multi-million-dollar improvements. Executives rarely know the true nature of a problem. How would they? They're not the ones performing the work, doing the mundane, entering the data, dealing with multiple people in authority, asking for reports of the same information in a dozen different formats. Most executives have no clue how the sausage is made or the real cost their policies and procedures have on increasing the cost of their product. We worked with a company where $100,000 salaried underwriters entered all customer information into their CRM, then entered the same information into 13 additional Excel spreadsheets in order to fill the needs of the owners, affiliates, executives, and managers, each with unique demands for dashboards and reports. By simply expanding their permission in Salesforce, we were able to have all those reports automated in the exact format each stakeholder wanted and delivered to their inboxes on time, every time, saving hundreds of thousands of dollars in laborious entry redundancy. The fix took a grand total of 3 seconds, but required 60 plus hours of observation, detailed maps, and time studies over the period of 3 months. Additionally, in that process, we found that the underwriters used outdated computers and that faster computers would cost $40,000, but improve overall efficiency by 8%. 8% more customers, 8% more revenue, 8% more bottom line profit, netting the company millions in additional revenue. In fact, a year later, they sold the company at a valuation premium that was unheard of in their industry. Analyze in mind. After creating detailed process maps and time studies, gather diverse perspectives to analyze the data, consult executives from other companies, software developers, process analysts, finance professionals, and other stakeholders in order to gain valuable insights. As you gather this feedback, dig deeper into the questions and concerns raised, ensuring a thorough understanding of the issues at hand. Note, if you're doing this process of mapping and timing yourself, you will certainly not get the best results. When the boss is present, performance increases, and the numbers you gather personally will be on an average 10% better than if observed at a distance or by a consultant. Many times we throw out first time studies. As people are on their best behavior, we wait until they're comfortable with our presence, or we like to use cameras, to see the real story. Once you have all this analysis, it's time to mine it. Read through each note and question. Dig deeper where you need to ask. Ask why over and over and over to get to the root of the issue and be honest with what the problems are, no matter how difficult that is. A few times in my career, I've worked with leaders who had revelations about their business and leadership abilities by problems uncovered in this stage, which caused them to abandon the process of change completely. The understanding that their own actions cost them and the organization untold millions caused them to immediately turn their heads away and pretend the whole change effort wasn't happening. Not being aware of the waste and the minutia of your business is not bad leadership. Not taking action on it once you're aware of it is. Find your happy path. Do not change solely for the sake of change. The benefits of change must be qualitative and quantitative and must consider the stakeholders that will be affected. Combining the numbers with the expected benefits to the parties facing the change is key to gaining adoption and improving outcomes. At this step, we want to clear our minds of what we think the solution is. Take the feedback we mine and think of every possible solution. Using our time studies and process maps, we draft out new versions of the process and estimate how much better each of those would be. Focusing on quick wins first to build the case for change, driving the conversation and subduing limbic response. In my book, The Lean Manager's Playbook, I tell the story of a furniture production line that assembled products with heavy-duty staplers. When timing their process, we noticed that about 15% of the time spent on the line was reloading staples into the staple guns. We showed the results to the staple gun manufacturer, and they noted that we were using strips with 50 staples per strip. Yet our guns accommodated up to 250 staples. The manufacturer also presented a modification to our guns that would allow a hydraulic feeder to be incorporated that would eliminate the need for reloading the staple guns altogether and completely remove that bottleneck of the problem forever. Management eagerly wanted to move to the new hydraulic system, but instead we insisted on an interim solution to move up to the 250 staple strips immediately in order to gain quick wins, celebrate and show off how change benefited the line. Refusing to rush to the next step until we'd harvested all of our wins and let everyone in the company see that change was exciting, beneficial, and easier than they imagined. Then and only then would we begin the effort to drop off some brochures of that fancy new system in the break rooms. Soon, the discovery of the new modified guns by a long-term employee who happened across a random brochure was celebrated with even more exuberance for change than before. Another example of how the happy path approach creates a culture and desire for change is a recent engagement with a client that had decided to replace their entire back-end office and accounting system. We agreed that it's antiquated and difficult, but in the process of reviewing the detailed mapping and time studies, it was determined that one step in the process was a time suck. Time suck refers to an activity or situation that consumes a significant amount of time, often without providing a proportional level of value or productivity. Time sucks can be distractions, unnecessary tasks, or inefficient processes that prevent individuals from focusing on more important and productive work. The time suck we uncovered accounted for over 50% of all labor in that process. We discovered a low-cost solution, under $200 a month, that would reduce that step by 80%, thereby eliminating 43.2% of all labor associated with that process. Now that organization has the capacity, time, and belief in change, as well as the knowledge that things will improve. Create your go team. Once you know the direction of change, it's critical to assign a team to lead the change. This must include an executive sponsor, a project team slash project manager, and a change team slash change manager. The executive sponsor approves funding for the overall project, gives credibility to the change, and begins to form a coalition. Your project manager will guide the solution to implement the change, while your change manager will guide individuals to adopt the change. The executive sponsor must be the champion and lead the change. Change cannot be led from behind. It requires the executive sponsor to be visible, communicative, open to feedback, and willing to lead the project to completion. Often we give the example of a piece of rope. Lay out a small piece of rope in a straight line. Try pushing one end of the rope towards the other, and it bunches up and moves in every direction. Now try pulling it and leading the rope to where you want it to go. Easy. This is the difference between leadership and management. Leaders bring others with them towards the objective. Managers try to push. Pushing doesn't work in implementing change. A project manager or PM is essential in getting things done. However, keep in mind that success for a project manager is meeting the requirements of the project on time and at or below budget. Project managers have nothing to do with getting people to change. Their basic mandate is solely to correctly build what needs built. Individuals using what was built is not part of their role. That is left to the change manager. Change managers, CMs, are considered by many as a luxury. And that can be true if failure, frustration, and a lost investment are what you're desiring. Then you don't need them. Otherwise, they're essential. If you want the change to stick, be adopted, and achieve your expected ROI, change teams are critical. Removing or not assigning a change manager to a project is a good way to assure your team that your project will fail. As we have discussed, we're all human with human limbic responses. We need to be led into change with a sense of urgency, clear vision, path to success, and consistent communication. A change manager manages that process so that others can lead. Do not downplay the importance of having a dedicated change manager who can effectively manage the complex process of implementing change. By providing the necessary expertise and guidance, a change manager can ensure that change is implemented smoothly and successfully, minimizing disruptions and optimizing outcomes. Exception. There must always be an executive sponsor involved in all change, but there are times when a project manager and change manager do not have to be involved in every step of the project, but instead can be called upon early in the planning of change and consulted at stages throughout the project. These instances are ones where change being implemented is not directly affecting individuals. No one's changing roles, responsibility, no system is being replaced or upgraded, no new product or service is being added. Instead, the changes are focused on the elimination or automation of a task. Things like automating a report, an Excel macro that performs calculations or automated lookups, combining spreadsheets, a redirection in the call tree, a new traffic pattern with fresh paint in the parking lot. These are all examples of projects that are automating aspects of a process, not replacing it. In those instances, you should consult a PM and CM to help create the framework, map the affected parties, and help with scheduling and training. But those are instances where designated, not dedicated resources are likely needed. Map the splatter pattern. Imagine you're doing some painting on your roof and a bucket of paint tips over and drops 20 feet to the ground. Where will the paint land? Well, much of the fallen paint will be at the impact point. But take a look around and you'll find paint has splattered on walls, sidewalks, grass, trees, and people. That's the splatter pattern of change. There will always be a heavily affected party, but other stakeholders will get dirty. It's crucial to understand the splatter pattern of change of all affected parties and the inertia of change. That is the resistance to change due to past inaction. Whether the threat comes from external sources like competitors, a pivot, or internal realizations that a process is broken, it's important to allow those affected by the splatter pattern to understand the threat and the reasons for change. We recommend happy paths as a starting point for change, focusing first on automating, outsourcing, abbreviating, or eliminating. After achieving success, consider innovation, replacement, and augmentation. Regardless of the extent of change, create a framework and identify those affected. The happy path approach allows more time to contemplate limbic response to change and address them accordingly. Incremental changes on a small scale carry less risk and can uncover fighters early on when their actions are less detrimental and costly. Identify individuals with high influence density. Those who lead people through their actions, not titles. These individuals are often frontline workers who have the ear of their counterparts, either through seniority, personality, or being the source of the rumor mill in the organization. Involving these individuals in the change process is crucial to prevent them from creating their own narratives. Companies that lack a culture of change can benefit from focusing on quick wins, which help them get used to the feeling of change and reduce future efforts to overcome inertia. There are various change management frameworks, such as ADKAR, Kotter's 8-step framework, or what you find here in this book. Understanding the Kubler-Ross change curve can really be insightful, as it reveals the human response to change is identical to the human response to the death of someone you love. One example of how the culture of change can spread within a company is a large supply company we've been working with for the last year and have brought significant efficiency changes at their headquarters. Recently, we went to another of their locations, some 850 miles away, and found that the changes we had made at the first location had already been implemented in some slightly modified form at this new location. We inquired as to why and how this happened. The team explained that word got around about how much better things were at headquarters, and they simply started mimicking the changes they saw at the other location. It's important to note that the leaders in this new location saw the financial benefits and heard from the affected people about how much better their work life was. They went back to their location and communicated this message. Life is easier at headquarters because of these changes, and it's gotten easier for this location by mirroring the other. At this new location, there's no resistance to our presence. Instead, they're proud of what they have accomplished and eager for us to help them find more change. Do the math and lead. Effective leadership in change management is crucial, and it increases the likelihood of successful outcomes. Leaders must actively participate, communicate the outcomes, and build a coalition to ensure the success of change initiatives. Leadership is a verb. You're required to walk the talk. Be conscious of change tolerance and willing to have open conversations about why change is needed and the expected outcomes. One of the biggest mistakes change agents can make is not quantifying the cost of inaction. Change is difficult and it's impossible when you don't understand the value it provides. Our method of approach is using old school manufacturing techniques that determine cycle times by measuring every step, click, movement, spreadsheet entry, phone call, with a stopwatch, then overlaying that data into a detailed value stream map. The value stream map is done twice. First is a part of the uncover and discover stage, creating the current state map. And then once you've identified the bottlenecks and found the happy path approaches, we create the happy math. Then after the happy math has been implemented and we've created the capacity and desire for change, we will create a future state map, reminding all the parties that the work's not done and that more value is awaiting to be implemented. Then after the happy math has been implemented and we've created the capacity and desire for change, we will create a future state map, reminding all parties that the work is not done and that more value is waiting to be implemented. It is critically important to track the amount of minutes and seconds each step takes, and secondarily to turn that into a calculator that measures the costs associated with each step. Years back, we worked with a large Fortune 10 company, and one of the things that impressed us the most was that every leader knew what their departmental labor cost per second was, and they managed the process in their departments by constantly considering the cost of adding or saving a few seconds here or there. To find the data points, you need to perform this calculation, and you'll need to know a few numbers. Cost of labor, for this example, let's say a salary of $55,000, means that we have a fully burdened rate of $77,000 annually. What we first do is we take the annual salary of the person doing the work, and we multiply it by 1.4. This gives us a fully burdened employee cost with taxes, benefits, retirement, paid time off. We divide that by the 52 work weeks in the year. We divide that by the 40 hours in a week. We divide that by the 60 minutes in an hour. And we divide that again by 60 seconds. This will give us our cost per second. These calculations are for a single person, so you'll need to multiply by two factors: the number of occurrences each day where that task is performed, and the number of people performing that task. Next, we have to go back to our time study and process maps to estimate the improvements we found. Time the current state of the process in seconds as it's done today, create a happy path process or processes, and estimate the time savings in relation to the current state. Once you know the time savings per occurrence, the number of times the event occurs, the number of people performing the task, and their cost of labor, you can calculate the value of the improvement. Seconds add up to minutes, minutes add up to hours, hours add to full-time employees. Regularly, we see companies measure millions of dollars in potential savings by shaving off minutes and seconds from redundant processes, or sometimes they even discover they can eliminate steps altogether and reap the benefits immediately. Rarely do we see companies use this data to eliminate employees. On the contrary, leaders see this as a way to get more capacity for the business to relieve stress on systems and create manpower capacity that can be used to pursue other endeavors, be more proactive, build more resilience, or expand. Creating a culture of adaptability. Yes, we made up the word. We can define adaptability as the ability to quickly and efficiently adapt to new situations or challenges, demonstrating both flexibility to change course and the nimbleness to make those changes swiftly. This term may be used to describe individuals, teams, or organizations that can effectively respond to evolving circumstances with speed and grace. Are you building an agile culture that's adaptable to change? Have you created a monitoring and feedback system to track progress, insights, and challenges? Have you provided the knowledge and ability to ingrain change within your culture? Are you recognizing the contributions of individuals or teams to change the effort? Is potential disruption being sought out and embraced in your organization? Are you aligning potential changes to your organizational strategic goals and vision? Are you actively looking for disruption in your marketplace and embracing it? These are all signs of a company with high adaptability. Change is the only remaining constant in business. We must adapt. We must understand that the only way to successfully become both agile and to adapt is to do so eagerly. To do that, you need everyone on board and rowing at the same cadence. Seeking out people, doing the affected work, soliciting their ideas, adopting and celebrating those success is a good way to get your team on board. In the CBS show Undercover Boss, CEOs go undercover as frontline employees in their companies to see what they can learn. In nearly every episode, the undercover CEO is perplexed by the origin of a tool, process, or method that did not come from corporate. In every instance, that innovation came from someone on the front line doing the work. The people doing the work are the best source of innovation. One of our favorite tools is the Kanban board. Kanban boards are practical visual aid that enable teams to streamline workflow and manage tasks efficiently. This tool typically comprises a board with columns that represent different stages of a project or process, and cards or sticky notes that represent individual work items. Each column on the board represents a specific phase of the workflow, such as to do, doing, or done when it comes to ideas. The work items move from left to right across the board as they progress through the various stages. By placing the board in a highly visible location, we're finding an online alternative that remote teams can access. Using a Kanban board, teams can quickly identify which tasks are in progress, which are completed, and which require attention. Kanban boards encourage collaboration, transparency, and continuous improvement within teams, making them a valuable tool in agile companies for project and change management and other collaborative environments. Kanban boards usually have to-do, doing, and done stages. We add an additional first column called ideas, where employees post their ideas within the board. Once a week, the employees gather together to hear each other out on the ideas, consolidating similar items, eliminating ones that are too difficult or irrelevant. Each team member is given 5 pennies or tokens with which they can cast votes for their favorite ideas. Team members can choose to vote for 5 different ideas, go all in one on one idea, or mix them up however they choose. The top 3 ideas are then presented to management to be considered for the to-do column. This process empowers the people actually doing the work to suggest, vet, and promote the ideas of those doing the work with them. We also have one other simple rule. Any idea that is shared with management before the team votes is disqualified. This rule discourages employees from trying to pitch their idea to management before it's been vetted by their peers. Does this work? Absolutely. I must admit that many times the ideas from the team are far better than anything management has had. We still apply the same process to these ideas as those we mapped and measured in the first place. And we share the results with the team, explaining why we did or did not choose to move forward. You would be surprised that even when an idea does not move forward, the fact that management considered it and investigated it is incredible for the morale of the team. Conclusion. Understanding the biological and evolutionary response to change is critical for effectively leading change. By acknowledging and addressing the limbic system's fight or flight response, we can better understand the resistance to change and help employees adapt more easily. The happy path approach focuses on small, incremental changes that can yield significant improvements by automating, outsourcing, abbreviating, or eliminating processes. Organizations can create positive change with less resistance and risk. When planning change initiatives, it's essential to identify who will be affected by this change and map the splatter pattern, which will highlight the potential resistance that may arise. By understanding the splatter pattern, organizations can create a change management framework that accounts for the impact of change on all stakeholders. Building a culture that embraces change is vital for businesses to adapt and succeed in a rapidly evolving world. Focusing on quick wins and celebrating improvements will create an environment where change is viewed positively and employees are eager for continuous improvement. Utilizing a change management framework, such as the one found in this book, ADKAR or Kotter's 8-step, can help guide organizations through the change process. These frameworks provide a structure for planning and executing change initiatives while considering the human response to change. Effective leadership is the key to successful change management. Leaders must actively participate, communicate the outcomes, and build a coalition of support to ensure the success of change initiatives. According to Gartner studies, only 34% of change initiatives succeed at achieving their desired outcomes. ProSci firmly states that the number one determining factor in successful change is effective executive sponsorship. The likelihood of a successful outcome increases up to 6 times if an effective executive sponsor leads the charge. But effective leadership in change is not just about signing checks and being CC'd on status updates. It includes 4 distinct areas where the leader must participate. There must be active visual participation throughout the process. People only respect what you inspect. 2nd, have a full and complete vision of the change. It's crucial. If it matters to you, it matters to your people. If your interest wanes, so will theirs, and change will fail. 3, communicate the outcomes. Cast a vision of what the future looks like after the change. Focus on outcomes for the people affected. Cost savings is not a benefit to any party that is not an owner or whose bonus is not associated with margin. So it's best to focus on what matters to them, improvement in their work life. Communication can't be just an occasional email. You've got to be the voice of change. You need to see the whites of their eyes. Get out there, shake their hands, hear their feedback, lead from the field. 4, build a coalition. The more support across the team, the better. A coalition is not an assignment or an appointment. It is built through the process of making the case with a variety of stakeholders, getting their buy-in, participation, and support for the efforts. The broader your coalition, the better your chance at success. In conclusion, we're biological creatures endowed with hundreds of thousands of years of wisdom embedded deep in our unconscious brains. Our ability to respond to change has gotten us this far as a species. And understanding the interplay between the human evolutionary response and change in the workplace will create an environment where resistance to change is minimal, as change is embraced as something that will provide direct relief to those affected. Leaders get what they wanted: lower cost, increased capacity, an easier process for which to train, better customer outcomes, improved delivery times, higher quality, while at the same time, employees get what they want: less stress, elimination of chaos, more opportunities for advancement, bonuses and raises, and most importantly, having a voice in the work they do. Thank you all for listening to this audio recording of Adapt Agility. If you'd like to find out more, you can check us out at theprocessfixer.com or Derek Maines, DerrickMainz.com.